Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast. Season 7 of the Laughter Permitted podcast with Julie Foudy has begun. Join Julie and her guests, including three-time U.S. Olympic medalist in snowboarding, Lindsay Jacobellis. Expect fun, thoughtful, and candid conversations with trailblazers in sports about the joy and chaos of life and sports. That's Laughter Permitted, wherever you listen to your podcast. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinee Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today, on ESPN, and the ESPN app. One app, one tap, and also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Spencer Hall, what's going on?
Something's gone drastically wrong.
Yeah, Dominique is taking some vacation time. Shout out to him. I be wanting to get mad about stuff like that sometimes. Then I remember we don't pay him no extra for this. So I'd be so happy that he even shows up when I say thank you. I mean, thank you.
I like that you went and got the exact opposite of Dominique in every single way.
Not every single way, though. That's the reason why this works, is that, you know, the sneaky similarity. That's the whole thing we got going here.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. The 40 times are a little different.
Yes, 40 that's different.
Yeah. One of us has been to Harvard, and that ain't me. Yeah, but otherwise, same person.
Oh, yeah. So I do want to tell you guys something. You know, I try not to do too much game theory talking Sunday nights on HBO. Check it out. But something did happen that was interesting. So we implemented a studio audience for the second episode for the first time. And let me tell you something, brother. I have been one of those people. I don't need a laugh track or an audience to tell me when to laugh. I might not, but y'all might. You know what I'm saying? So we gonna give y'all a little assistance. You dig? We gonna give you a little help to figure out how to make it work. But, you know, when they do these studio audience things, and I've never myself been to a show with a studio audience, but they send out somebody to warm up the crowd, right? Maybe it'll be like a DJ, but it's normally a comedian. And so my little brother James went out there and warmed the crowd up as a comedian. Now, I'm really good with cameras and microphones. Mm-hmm. I don't really do a lot of playing to crowds, right? Like, I'm kind of like Mariah Carey in that sense. Like, I don't know if y'all remember this, but when Mariah Carey did her first tour, it was a big deal because she was a studio singer. Like, she didn't come up scraping by in clubs. She came up singing backup. And by the way, Mariah Carey singing backup, that's only happening once. Well, I guess you can't lose your record contract because of her. It's not like somebody could take your job, but still. But anyway, so I'm watching James. You know, James has done a one-hour Comedy Central special. He's had his own show on Comedy Central. You know, he opened for Hasan Minhaj at Radio City. You know, he's a comedian. Mm-hmm. So he goes out. I'm watching him. He's killing. And he gets all the energy drummed up, you know. Y'all know who y'all came to see, right? All of that stuff, and the people are clapping, and woo, right? And I'm back there, and I'm smiling, and it's real cool. And then I got to be the one to stand in front of them and say some words. Like, I was hoping I could just, like, they do the clapping, mm-hmm. I do a wave, I go sit down at the desk, and we do business. I had to try to entertain those people. And let me tell you something, brother, that right there is a different skill set.
So I've done a couple of different live environments, but the one where I cut my teeth were on these kind of promotional tours that usually went with, you know, bowl games. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, I had to do one of these, which was coordinating like a friendly fan trivia. Okay. It's like the corniest setup possible, right? But they're paying me, so it's cool. So I'm out in Arizona, and this is when Auburn was playing for the national title, when Cam Newton was quarterback and was the entire team, and I'm out there, and one of the trivia questions involves NCAA rules violations, and this is a crowded room, heavily Auburn, okay? Not a whole lot of Oregon, right? And you can easily tell the Oregon people because they're all wearing athleisure, They're all like, well, I went for a brisk walk this morning. I'm going to do a little yoga. Then I'm going to go watch the game. Then I'm going to get up and have a smoothie, and I'm going to do it all again. You know, like, those are Oregon people. That's not Auburn people. Auburn people are drunk. Auburn people are all over the place, and it's most of the crowd. So this rule about NCAA violations comes up. And I think this says a lot about who you are in any situation, right? Did you have the urge to just go right at them? Did you have the urge to be like, why are y'all looking at me? You want to look at me? Fine. I'm going to look at you. Right? Did you have that urge, or were you just like, okay, let's entertain?
I'm not a loosey-goosey, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's just not in my personality inclination, mm-hmm. at least not sober, right? I'm not a loosey-goosey. And so I just got out there, and I said some thank yous, and I said that same thing I just said about, now tell these people to laugh, please. It would be greatly appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't laugh nearly as hard at that as nope. I like would have preferred. I thought that was actually pretty clever, self-deprecating. But no, I did it, and then I went and sat down and did the television. And see, that part's easy because you can't see the audience. Like, all I can really see is their feet. And so you just look at the camera, and then it's helpful because you know if somebody actually thought something was funny. Because I think that people believe that the studio audience, like, we ain't got the lighted signs, right? Like, I've seen the lighted signs. We don't have those. And let me tell you something, brother. I do think that, you know, they make sure to laugh, like, hard when it's time to laugh. But if they ain't gonna laugh, baby, they don't.
No.
That happens. You still get that fart in church feeling. It is still right there.
No, if you put bacon in a cold pan, guess what? You got some uncooked bacon. It's not going to sizzle. The sizzle does not come with the pan automatically.
No.
And I think there's different kinds of, you know, like, I found out what kind of a person I was during those because I had the little thing in my hand, which was this question about NCAA violations. And I was like, well, I could just read the question. Or I could piss some people off. And I was like, well, which button am I going to put? And before I could even sort of think about it, I was like, well, I know how y'all people are about rules. And like the whole crowd just went. But they were awake. They were awake. And I was like, okay, cool. As long as I can keep you mad, right? Slightly mad, and then maybe make you laugh afterwards, right? But I know that like if I did enough of these, I would get a Dave Chappelle in Detroit situation, right? Like I would get a situation where it was like, you all get a refund. You're throwing crap at me. I get it. Why don't you come back tomorrow? Because I'm going to poke the bear.
Yeah.
I have, like, if I get in front of a crowd, I'm going to find somebody and I'm going to be like, you and I are fighting in front of everyone right now.
So let me tell you my Auburn story. And I want to just say one thing about Auburn as we go, because I think we have a lot of people here who are not simply casual observers of college football. And certainly, like, you and I like college football on, I believe, anthropological level. Anthropology is one of those words I realize I actually don't know the meaning of, but I can use it in sentences. And I know that most people aren't like that. And I know that most people have a, like, blanket view of Southern people. You have to understand that, like, every caricature that you have in your mind of an Alabama fan is actually an Auburn fan. Like, they Auburn, now the fans are a little different because they just the people in the streets. But, like, every place has its classy people and its salt of the earth. Even in the South, there's the distinction between those places. And Alabama is the aristocracy of the place, and Auburn is the hardworking farming type people of the state of Alabama, right? That's who they are. So you just need to know that those are who those people are. But I did a talk at Auburn in the year 2012. The year 2012 is important because, as you recall, they won a national championship in 2010 and managed to go winless in the SEC in 2012, in case you were wondering just how good Cam Newton was. Anyway, I'm there, I'm doing a talk, and I don't remember what compelled me to make a very, very, very tiny joke about the struggles of the football program. I just want you guys to know and understand, baby, that what they didn't have no sense of humor about that. Like, nobody threw nothing at me or anything like that, but I definitely got some hard stares, and it was either the week of or the week after Obama got reelected. Like, it was a tense time. But I rock with Auburn and the greater Opelika area. By the way, I have an uncle who married on separate occasions two different women from Opelika, and he is not from Opelika himself, which is pretty impressive.
That's tight.
Yeah. But hey, Tumors, that drugstore, They serve bluebell. So they won me over right then and there. When I went over there, I'm like, oh, y'all serve bluebell? Okay, that's what's up. But my favorite moment of somebody talking to Auburn fans, did you ever see the clip of that time Richard Spencer went to Auburn?
I was just about to mention that.
Woo!
Just about to mention
So for the people who don't know this, you may remember Richard Spencer. At that time when people were trying to tell us that we needed to listen to, like, actual racists, like, not even guys trying to deny it. And so Richard Spencer was going around doing these talks, and he did his talk at Auburn. And by the way, I want to say, he didn't have that many more people in the room when he went to Auburn than I did.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you guys an understanding of who likes what and how many people actually have audiences. So anyway, Richard Spencer gets to talking, and, you know, he's talking this white righteousness stuff. And they with it, and you feel them building up, and he's talking about how they got to do for themselves, and he getting some hell yeahs about that. And then he said, and what we really need to do is stop giving so much attention to football.
Just, you know, you had some momentum, baby. You want to derail it? I know one way to do it in a room full of Auburn fans. What we need to do is de-emphasize football. Boo!
Yo, the needle went off the record. Like, I actually don't think that people realize, like, the level of progress that white people have made in even tolerating us playing football. And I understand that what I'm saying is a very low bar. But you have to recall that up until the 1970s, much of the country said, no, we'd rather watch football with all white guys rather than watch a collection of the best football players ever. Like, that was what they mm-hmm. wanted to do. And then they got a taste of it, and they ain't never trying to go back. No siree, Bob. They're not trying to hear it. They like what they saw. They like what they got. If somebody tried to break out the Iowa defense at any school in the SEC, for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about here, I counted it up. Iowa had more white players on defense and that were starters than the entire Southeastern Conference.
Uh-huh. That the entire SEC.
The whole SEC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to know who cares about white safeties? Iowa football cares if nobody else cares.
Yes, okay. Yes. And look, even like a school like Vanderbilt, that ain't even that good. They should just be playing for the love of the game. They not trying to do that. They like a lot of them boys in Atlanta got good grades.
Hey, don't sleep on Vandy, okay? Vandy is trying. I will say, quantifiably, they're building fancy new facilities. They got themselves a new logo. It sucks, but there is no good Vandy logo, right? Some teams are just stuck, right? Uh-huh. What are you going to do when, like, who's your mascot? Well, it's an outdated, no longer existing naval rank. You're like, yeah, it's going to suck. I can't do anything with that. You're not going to have a cool mascot. Like, you can't screw up some things. Like, for instance, if you're a bulldog, that's like a B. The floor on a bulldog is a B because a bulldog's a cool looking thing. Tiger, kind of generic. It's like the most common mascot name, but tigers are awesome, like quantifiably awesome. You can get some cool graphics. A Commodore, I can't do anything with a man in a funny hat and a sword. I can't. It's just like you've just given me like the off-brand version of a Cavalier, okay? Which isn't even that great a mascot. It's just not, okay? Except when he falls off. Every 3 or 4 years, the person on the back of the horse falls off and we get a good GIF. Other than that, you can't do anything with him, all right? But Vandy, even with all that, Vandy is trying, okay? They are actually trying at football.
Yeah, it was any entity in college football, and it's good that they're trying because, like, they're stealing money.
Were.
Nobody else is. And what I mean by that is, if they get equal shares of the TV money with the rest of the SEC, not one person is tuned in to a Vanderbilt game in the time slots that make money, A, because they never play in those. But even if they did, nobody's watching to watch them. Like, all Vanderbilt's there to do is get you fired. Oh, you lost to Vanderbilt, eh? We have to reassess what's going on here. And they get the same share of the money as Alabama.
Yeah, and free riders, baby. That's my favorite thing. It's that economically, the people behind Vanderbilt University are the best off in the conference, right? Like, that's if you go to Vanderbilt, if you're a steward of the Vanderbilt University legacy, if you're an alumni, you by and large have more money than anybody else, right? So what better way to work that than to go, you know what? What's the least amount of work we can do for the most amount of money program-wise? You're like, have an SEC football program, but don't really compete, okay? I'm not necessarily saying that that was the conscious calculation, but after a while you look up and you go, balance sheet's looking kind of fat, boys. The weight room? Skip it for 5 years. That's fine. Just let that money stack. What are you going to do with it? We're a private institution. None of your business. None of your business. That's the other thing. They're a private institution. So if you want any transparency on those numbers, good luck. Good luck, my friend. And the SEC, by the way, transparency on those numbers, even for public institutions, kind of hard, right?
Yeah.
Like, we know the Alabama football budget, right? But it's kind of opaque in terms of, like, what a recruiting budget is spent on. That's not me going like, well, are they paying people? That's fishy. No, we just don't know, right? Because a lot of these times the finances are divided up between the program and the nonprofit corporation that technically funds the program but is separate from the program. Those are different, right?
As I look at like how Vanderbilt plays it and their ability to, you know, pull this off, it makes me think though that the SEC at some point must have called and said something to the effect of, like, look, I know you paid the cover charge, but you ain't just going to sit here by the stage and not spend no money. That's not going to be what this is, right? Like you're not just going to be happy to be here. No, sirree, Bob. If you are going to be here, you are going to participate. And so you will have to step these things up.
Mm-hmm. Also, there's a little pattern of other private institutions in the history of the SEC either getting the same notice or seeing it coming, because if you'll remember, Tulane at one point was an esteemed member of the Southeastern Conference, and they said, nah, we're kidding. After putting up a miserable record throughout the 1940s and 50s, just said, you know, we can't even do this. Vanderbilt's never done that. Vanderbilt's like, no, we'll try. We'll get it together. We'll keep it because the checks are nice. Checks are real nice.
Well, Tulane is actually interesting to think about, like, as you move in, because that was back in the days of the segregated stuff. But now, like, in theory, you could be looking at it like, yo, they are in New Orleans. If they could get all the players from New Orleans to stay, except, let's be real about this, whole reason you get good at football is to get out of New Orleans. Like, if you get good enough to play and you stay like that, there's a chance you're hustling backwards, young fella.
There is also this, that Tulane actually at one point, I think it might have been 15, 20 years ago, expressed some interest in rejoining the SEC, which is humorous to me because at that point, what on earth did you have to offer?
Not a thing,
right? Additionally, this is very much a Tulane in the SEC. Well, let's see. What would LSU think of that? The LSU probably wouldn't be real happy with that at all. This would very much be an Alabama UAB situation where Alabama said, you know, it'd be cool if you didn't exist, right? LSU essentially got that wish and has thrived in football as a result of the lack of in-state competition in the same conference, which is something that, if you think about the SEC, it gets so weird because we've talked about this before, that there are multiple states which are small, relatively poor, and not necessarily blessed with huge populations like Mississippi and Alabama.
South Carolina? Well, they only got one in there, but still.
They got one, but it's like one and a half if you're considering the shadow empire that is Clemson University. But you've got these states that are, you know, cut up between two schools. Mississippi, as small as it is, has to compete with two schools, right? Mississippi State and Ole Miss have to split that talent pool in state. And the most reliable indicator of where somebody's going to go is proximity to mom and dad. That's really, like, proximity to family is the most important and relevant indicator of where a recruit's going to go. And they still have to split those. LSU hasn't had to do that. You know, I know every Raging Cajuns fan here and every Tulane fan hearing this is like, well, you know, we're over here. Yeah, but you're not in the same conference. Frankly, it's not the same competition, right?
Your whole roster is full of guys that didn't get an offer from LSU.
Correct. You know, post Saban, they've had the run of the place. You will pull people out of Louisiana from time to time, but on the whole, that's the show. You're never putting another school in there. Tulane is never coming back.
And Ole Miss has an interesting break with them, which is the peculiar geography of the state of Tennessee, where Memphis is basically Ole Miss home territory. So Tennessee, which used to always have like one of the highest recruiting budgets every year because they have to recruit nationwide because there are players in their state, but they're like 5-6 hours away by car. And Memphis does not rock with the University of Tennessee in the same way. And so them boys were stuck with the option of that or going to Ole Miss for a stretch. Yikes. But that's not what it used to be. But still, like, that's the play that they wind up having. And you're right. LSU is like, nope, we get every player in this state we want. If they don't go here, it's probably just because we did not want them.
Memphis, by the way, being, I think, still an underrated football power. Like, I think somebody could do even more than what Memphis has done over the past like 5 to 10 years. And I'm talking about, you know, University of Memphis, because it's the capital of like four very weird territories that all happen to be football mad. And, you know, for a long time, Memphis had been up and down in football. They've had a consistent run. And also Memphis itself being a more compelling draw than Ole Miss, I think, in terms of cultural fit for some players, might be an easier pull. Why don't you just come where you're going to hang out anyway? Because I know you're all coming to hang out. I know you're all coming to hang out in Memphis. Why don't you just play football here, right? You don't want to hang out in Oxford, right? Starkville might be a little bit easier, but Memphis versus Starkville, is that a choice for you? The only factor that, you know, Starkville's really going to have is we put more players in the league. That's it. We put more players in the league and, you know, we play an SEC schedule. Otherwise, why don't you just stay by the river? Just stay put, man.
Well, Fred Smith needs to get more Tillman Fertitta in him, because I'm from Houston. And one thing about the University of Houston, they want it, baby. The whole world has been out to stop them from getting it. But they want it, baby. And that's why Tillman's like, yeah, we got a $5 million a year coach. That's what we're going to do around here. Fred Smith has not leaned into the Memphis thing in quite the same way. Not that he doesn't give them money, but he's just kind of being nice.
He's being nice. He, you know, he got a kid. He got a kid on the roster there. That happened, right? He got Cannon Smith, who's Fred Smith's son, was working. He's not the only Smith who's in the football business. Arthur's current head coach of the Falcons. And, you know, he's going to be real successful there, because everyone who coaches the Falcons is super successful. By the way, you being the master of all things misery and Falcons.
Yes.
Were you aware that there's footage of the Falcons mascot just taking the top off and sitting in a dugout and drinking a beer?
Somebody sent that to me yesterday. I had never seen it, and it's perfect.
I've never seen it either. Yeah, he's the Falcons mascot. They're losing badly to the Rams, and I think it looks like 1980 something. It's like sometime, yeah, it's like sometime, like it looks like pre-Glanville, miserable, probably like what, Marion Campbell, right?
Yeah.
Like that's probably who's coaching this awful football team, and they're losing badly, like 26-7 in the fourth quarter. And they flash over to the dugout, because I'm pretty sure they're
playing. Fulton County Stadium.
It's either Fulton County Stadium or it's someplace in L.A. where they're playing on
baseball.
Oh,
no, no, because the mascot ain't going there. That was Fulton County Stadium.
Okay, so it's Fulton County Stadium, so they're playing in the dugout, right? Which is already a cursed place, because that's the Bad Braves dugout, right? I know. They just won the World Series. That's still surprising to me, because I grew up with the Braves as like playing in a trash bag-laden, abandoned Atlanta Fulton County Stadium with like 52 wins a year. You're getting like 52 wins a year, and one of their starters was getting arrested for coke. That was like every single year in Atlanta, right? But yeah, they flash over, and in the dugout, the Atlanta Falcons mascot, who was already weird looking, kind of like a sad bird, has taken the entire top half of the mascot gear off, and it's just wearing the bird legs, and it's sitting in the dugout, and there is visible, like, he looks miserable and beaten and sweaty and tired, and over to the side there is like a half consumed 24 ounce stadium beer, which is clearly the mascot's, and he's just watching it like, yeah, I'm one of you, man.
And why did this come out? Because the Falcons took pillar of the community Matt Ryan and disrespected him in an amazing way by trying to get Deshaun Watson while he's still on the team, and then they trade him to the Colts for a third round pick so that they could sign Marcus Mariota. And don't get me wrong, I don't think the gap between Marcus Mariota and Matt Ryan is enough to justify the salary gap between those two players. But that's got to smart a little bit if you're Matt Ryan. And I know you guys think I'm hard on Matt Ryan. I think the Falcons should name the field after Matt Ryan, at the very least retire his jersey. I just don't think he's a Hall of Famer. And guess who else doesn't think he's a Hall of Famer, apparently? Arthur Blank and company.
Or, to continue a theme, sell high, baby. When are we ever going to get more for one Matrick Ryan?
But it was such a dumb Falcons move in the sense, and I said this, last year was the year to try to get a quarterback. There's no quarterback in the draft this year. What is your actual plan? Your only plan was literally get rid of the quarterback. That's never a good idea.
No, I know what this plan is. I know what this plan is. This plan is we're going to make this is the fried rice year. If you're familiar with fried rice as a concept, fried rice is generally what you make when you're trying to use up things in the fridge. And, you know, it's like the day before, and you go, okay, well, what have I got? I got a little ham, Got some frozen peas. We're going to make a little fried rice. It's going to be great. Got some old rice from the day before. That's kind of what fried rice is as a dish, okay? The Falcons are the kings of the fried rice roster, all right? Because they're going to look at the year and go, we need to go grocery shopping tomorrow, but we have to eat tonight. Now, in a good franchise, you've planned ahead, and you're going to go grocery shopping the next day. The Falcons will just skip grocery shopping for decades on end. So you just get like odds and ends. We're just going to start Chris Redman. We're just going to go ahead and have our Marcus Mariota year, right? All respect to Marcus Mariota. He's a fine athlete. I don't think he's going to be a great starter for the Atlanta Falcons. He's kind of a make do at that position. This is what the Falcons do every single year at every single position. And now like at like three major positions, no sweat, right? Including quarterback. So this is definitely going to be another like refrigerator safari of a roster, you know, and we'll go grocery shopping next year. That's fine.
I've encouraged them many times not to tolerate this behavior.
You see, I was watching. I wanted to ask you, Joel was getting on you last night about being off the poison. And I'm like, no, I think Bomani is fully off the Falcons poison. 100% cold turkey. You have gone through whatever withdrawal symptoms. You are not going back, right? I don't think you get over the college football poison. I just think it's in your DNA.
Yeah.
Now, you can tell me you're not, but I think you're always going to be a little hooked by the Longhorns. Just a little bit, right?
So, I learned I'm always a little hooked on the Braves. That I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Braves don't spit in my face all the time like Texas does. Like, that damn song just really created a problem that is almost intractable for me. So, I could be, like, happy for some dudes. Like, I'd like good things to happen for Bijan Robinson. He's really talented. Who's my man Worthy, the receiver? Mm-hmm. I can see that, right? But then they score and they spit in my face.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they've done for, like, a century.
God, man. Yeah, they just they don't even want to win. Like, that's the worst thing. They'd rather spit in my face than win. And that's the part that I can't roll with. But I do have to say this. There are very few fans who can know what it's like to just say for a whole decade, we're going to win 10 games. Like, I look at the things that we complained about during that run of 10 wins, and man, and don't get me wrong, those were underachieving teams. They all, except for one team, every single one of them should have been better. They had three teams that I really felt like played to potential. 05, 08, 09. They legitimately played to potential. But man, this right here.
Yeah, see, I'm a Florida fan. We've done nothing but win games for the past 10 years, 15 years.
Y'all went from ashy to super classy, drop of a dime.
Yeah, and then we went straight back to ashy, deeply ashy, like volcanic.
Then a few years of class. It was a quick ash, and then it was quick class, and then it's been a lot of ash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or another word that sounds a lot like that, yeah. It's been bad, and if you look back and go, man, I got so mad over that one loss, you kind of want to time travel back and like absolutely backhand yourself and go, you don't know what you have. It's emotionally like that's a human psychological thing. It's impossible to actually appreciate what you have while it's going on, even if you know you should. Even if you know you should. Like, you can go back and be like, hey, we're going to win 10 games a year for 10 years. 10 games a year for 10 years, right? Which is basically what Mac Brown did. Is to go and take an entire decade and win, you know, like 100 games and be really, really good every year, like, and win one national title out of it. That's what you got. And you'll still complain about it. And I'll remember, I'll go like, okay, you know, like when Urban Meyer was the coach, which had its own problems and its own issues, we're the best team in the nation. Did you properly appreciate that? And I'm like, nah. Not at all. And I couldn't. I don't think you can tell anybody that, right? You can't tell anybody to not complain when they are 11-1 and they're going to complain about the one, because I know where you're at. And it's impossible. Like, fans are emotionally illiterate. They cannot possibly put themselves in the right position.
Well, let me give you a counterpoint. So I was talking to somebody once who watched film with a quarterback from that Texas decade.
Yeah.
And just had a question for him, like, why were you doing that? Where were you looking? And he's like, all right, I was looking at the running back. And he was like, well, why are you looking at the running back? Because that was the first read.
primary read. Yeah, this is the Greg Davis offense.
And that's all I got to say about whether or not I should have just been happy with them 10 wins. You know what I mean?
T-bills, baby.
Yeah.
It's the T-bill offense. What is it? Hey, 1-2% interest, man. You'll never go broke.
Like, as much as I want to be like, yeah, you're right, I got to look at these things a little bit differently, this something like that happens, and I'm just like...
If you play it real safe with five-star players, man, you're going to get like the most reliable and disappointing 8, 9, 10 win seasons, right? If you have an offensive coordinator who's like, well, your primary read is that 2-yard flat. That's what you're looking for, is the 2-yard flat, right? We're going to throw it 60 times a game for 240 yards. That is absolutely what you're going to get. And if you want to take risks downfield, I don't know, maybe you get USC. You get Pete Carroll's USC, where you have guys lateraling the ball for no reason in championship game situations.
What a great play.
Which I love. What a great play. I absolutely love that. Same. That you have a Ferrari and you're like, hey, you know what I'm going to do? Drift. I'm going to do a little drifting in this Ferrari. Why not?
Oh, man, that was crucial. That was so clutch. I just can't tell you how great it was when that happened.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
By the way, while we on the football, I got my head so far up my keister with this here TV show, and I don't do like TV every day anymore. So I kind of, you know, drop in every now and then. I'm like, what you mean Tyreek Hill got traded? Tyreek Hill got traded to the Dolphins. He went down there. He got him a $120 million contract, and I read something on it that I didn't love. It's like Davante Adams got that money, and Tyreek Hill was like, okay, well, that's what I want. And the Chiefs were like, nah, dog, we're not doing that. He's like, all right, well, let me see if somebody will or something like it. All right. And he found it. And they said, all right. And you know why that happened? Because Andy Reid became the Chip Kelly of pro football. And I mean that in the sense that Chip Kelly figured out, I got an offense that I can just put really fast 3 stars in and it'll work. Trust me. Watch. And I feel like that's what the Chiefs have. Right? Just a bunch of NFL, like, low-level 4-star, 3-star guys, but they're all really, really fast. And then you just drop them off out there. Like, Tyreek Hill, he's not the best receiver in the league, but it doesn't matter because he's that fast playing over there.
So, Andy Reid is the guy in any kind of ensemble action drama who they're like, so what's up with that guy? And they're like, yeah, that guy, he's the knife guy. He's the knife guy. He's fine. Just don't let him have a knife. If he gets a knife, he'll get bloodlust and we're all dead, right? So don't get a knife. And of course, the plot in the movie is he finds a knife. Andy Reid always finds a knife, and people just keep handing them to him. In the draft, he always takes these dudes from college who everybody goes, third round? How did he get to the third round, right? He always finds these guys who you go, oh no, that's a problem. How did you let him have that? That is a serious problem, you know? And even just like his secondary guys, he picks up like Hardman or... You know, he picked up Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who I think is just like a fantastic talent who can do pretty much everything real well and was the reason that LSU was, you know, Joe Burrow was obviously the centerpiece of that team, but that doesn't happen without Clyde Edwards-Helaire being so versatile out of the backfield and so polished at such a relatively young age for a running back going into the pros. Andy Reid finds those dudes. He finds those dudes all over the place where other people don't seem to. So I know there are people who are Chiefs fans who might be overly concerned about losing somebody who runs a 3.8, right? Which Tyreek Hill looks stupid fast among bona fide stupid fast people. He can get open.
Immediately.
Just embarrassing. He embarrasses professionals. That's how I know you're a terrifying talent, is that his quickness and speed really embarrasses other professionals. But is it going to make a huge difference for what the Chiefs are? No, because I'm pretty sure you're all in trouble because Andy Reid's going to find a knife. He always does.
By the way, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you don't want those problems.
Mm-mm. No, let's remind everybody that Clyde Edwards-Helaire has actually shot a man.
And after he shot the man, the general consensus was, got to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know that Clyde Edwards-Helaire killed that man because it wasn't a controversy. It was a simple case of self-defense.
Yeah, and it was, I believe it was some sort of Craigslist transaction gone wrong where they attempted to rob Clyde Edwards-Helaire. This was a shootout in a truck, I believe. In a truck. This is a shootout happening at distances of 2 to 3 feet. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire walked out of that truck. You don't want it.
That boy don't scare.
No!
That boy don't scare.
No! Like, what are you going to do when you're facing a complex seven-man blitz? What are you going to do when somebody tries to rob you? What did I do? I killed the other guy. And then I went to the cops and I was like, he deserved it. And the cops were like, yep.
The boy don't Clyde. Scare. That's the other thing. And his name is Clyde. And his name's Clyde.
At the hospital, they just look at that baby and they're like, is that a badass? Yes or no? Yes, you may name him Clyde. Go ahead.
Look, man, every now and then, I feel like the NFL teams do the background checks. And one man's red flag is another man's tell me more.
Tell
and
me.
So, and so do you remember this dude? I think his name was Kenrick Ellis. Like, I think the Jets drafted him. He started at some big program and then he had to leave because of some disciplinary stuff. And he went to, I want to say Hampton.
Mm-hmm.
But he was accused of assault where apparently he was a giant defensive tackle and apparently he just beat the dog out of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if his story is true, but his story was that he had to do it because the dude ran up on him with a baseball bat. And all I'm saying is if somebody came at you with a baseball bat and left with a broken face, you're mm-hmm. going up my draft board, buddy. Not down.
That's the old Raiders strategy. Like, you got anything on your record? And they're like, well, where do you want to start? And they're like, welcome to the Oakland Raiders of the 1970s. That was 100% the Oakland MO.
Well, like, do you remember when Dak Prescott got his ass beat at Panama Beach that year during spring break?
Poor Dak.
Yeah. Gotta say, that might be why he went in the fourth round instead of the third.
Some scouts undoubtedly doing that, right? Like, I don't know. Hasn't got a chance. I felt so bad for him, too, because Dak was obviously having a real good time. It looked like exactly what you wanted. It was the spring break of everyone's fantasies, right? Like, there's two events that nobody's ever actually attended other than, like, a thin slice of people, which is the ideal spring break and the ideal high school party. You know, high school parties happen in movies, and people are like, oh, wow, where did that happen? The answer's nowhere. You weren't invited. You didn't make it, right? The ideal spring break where everyone's having a real good time and everyone's real handsome and pretty. Yeah, that doesn't exist except for this one place Dak Prescott was at. He had like a new bathing suit on too. I can tell he was like, it's going to make me look good. I got a new bathing suit. Okay, we're looking good. I got a beach outfit. And then somebody beats his ass on camera. You wind up face down in the Florida panhandle in your new beach outfit with the whole world to see. I don't know if there's a professional contract that's going to ever make me feel better about that.
And you notice that we're not talking, this was not a split decision, right?
No,
we're not talking about this as though there was any ambiguity about what side came out on top.
Wasn't fair either, I will
True.
Say. It was not fair.
Forgot about that.
No, he didn't have enough blockers to take on all of the blitzers who were coming at him, okay? There were some unfair angles, but that can happen, right? You got to be prepared for that because what's the best tool for self-defense? What's the best move? A good pair of running shoes. You got to just get out of there, especially
yeah.
if you're on camera. You caught me running. That's cool. You didn't catch me getting knocked out.
Yeah. You also don't have the option of rolling out when girls are watching, unfortunately. Like, that was just, oh, man, I guess I got to scrap this thing out, huh?
You know what?
Him out.
Those girls might have seen me. There's girls who won't see me, okay? There's girls who will never see this video, and they're over there, and I'm going to run to them, right? In fact, I might tell them, oh, I'm in trouble. Oh, my God. Can we help you? See, this is like Dak did not think that through.
And by the way, you can win the I ran away story very easily just mm-hmm. by being really funny about talking about how and why you ran away. Like, people respect that. It's like, yo, man, it was two of them cats, man. I broke out.
Yeah, I don't want me getting a concussion to be somebody's highlight reel on Twitter for the day. I really, really don't. That's a life goal of mine, is to avoid that situation.
Yeah, I didn't run because I was scared. I ran because I'm not stupid.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that would be worse than getting knocked out on camera, right, in this day and age, would be somebody liver-shotting me. I saw a highlight reel of, I believe, it might have been Jerry Cooney. No, it wasn't Jerry Cooney. It was the modern-day Jerry Cooney, whose name I am going to remember. But it was just a highlight reel of body shots, people getting liver shot. If you're not familiar with what that does to the body, bad things. The liver's connected to everything. It's like the biggest.
It's really big.
It's the biggest organ that is a piece on the operation puzzle. Okay, people go, well, it's the skin. Get out of here. No. Largest one's the liver. Nobody thinks of the skin as an organ. Well, maybe you should. Technicalities. It's the liver. If you hit it, it's basically like hitting the lights out button on a whole lot of things in the body, and it hurts like hell. I've been liver shot before, and honestly, I would rather you take a baseball bat to my head, because I'm not going to remember that. I'm going to remember the liver shot, okay? So, like, as bad as Dak was, at least they didn't take a liver shot on him in front of everybody, because that might not have looked as bad, but it would have felt worse.
They would have come with that.
Oh, bad noises. Just the uncomfortable, involuntary noises. You don't want that. No, just catch me snoring. That's all I'm going to get, right? I'll wake up and be like, is Butterbean okay? I'll do the Johnny Knoxville.
Hey, one more thing I was going to ask you. So I think you'll like something we're doing on Game Theory.
Mm-hmm.
This week we are going to take a look at the rise in HBCU sports.
Ooh, good.
Yeah.
How we're going to try the Dion experiment a couple different ways and how it might not work out the way everybody thinks it will.
Mm-hmm. That is something that I do believe is worth exploring. It could happen.
Or how the Dion experiment might not work out the way everybody thinks it's going to work out. It's going well now. It is. It is going well. Thing in college sports is always this. Oh, we're going well. That is no indication of how it's going to perform tomorrow. Absolutely
like you'd
none.
Think it would be, right? Like, it stands to reason. I see why you would draw such a conclusion.
Additionally, might want to explore other endeavors of long-term investment management that Deion Sanders has been a part of and see how those ended up.
Maybe
look up a charter school or two and see how that works. Additionally, I want you to think about this, okay? So, Sam Pittman, right? Arkansas, notoriously not an HBCU.
Yes.
Okay? The entire state of Arkansas, not an HBCU. Has one. Is not one.
Joel Anderson told me during the Great Migration, we transferred out of Arkansas at a greater rate than any other state in the South. That includes Mississippi.
Bailing out before you even knew you had a shoot, right? Like, hey, do you want to... Because it's hard. It's hard. Like, Arkansas is a hard place by default, and it's a real hard place if you happen to be a member, a person of color, or a minority, especially at a certain juncture in history in Arkansas. But Arkansas coach Sam Pittman, on his property this week, installed a beautiful hog statue. I mean, a custom hog statue that is a fountain that slobbers. And Sam Pittman has been very successful and has been great at Arkansas. And if you told me in a college athletic story involving Sam Pittman in Arkansas that in a week he would be fired, I would totally believe it. Absolutely. Like, there are no institutions that cannot be fired. Something could happen in a week to just get him completely out of the paint. And that's as good a story. And there would be a house with a weird hog statue that somebody would have to do a lot of explaining to the orthodontist who buys it, right? In like 2 years, right? Like, so, it's a great house. Can you explain the slobbering hog to me? I need to know more about the slobbering hog. And you go, I don't have enough time today to get you to the point where we can really understand this, you know? Because I can tell you everything. You'd be like, so why a slobbering hog? And you're like, oh, man, I'm going to need like a week to properly get you to speed on this. So, like, when I see the Dion thing, I'm always like, yeah, it's going well. Let's just keep an eye on that.
We're going to go a little more macro to Dion, but I will say this. The way you feel about that one, I'm looking at Grambling with Hugh Jackson. Like, don't you understand? Everybody has gotten tired of him everywhere that he was, and they wasn't all tripping.
Yeah.
Hugh did the thing that everybody wants to do, but everybody's afraid of. He went out there and tried to hire the best offensive coordinator working, except he's not working, and there's a reason for that.
He tried it. He tried it. How'd it go? Very badly.
I told you what my theory was about that, right?
Mm.
Art Briles and the former AD, was it Ian McHale, the guy at Liberty now?
Yeah.
They've both made the point, and I think they're right, that the football program and its black players were used as scapegoats to obscure the larger sexual assault problem at Baylor. That doesn't absolve Art and Ian of their responsibilities, but that fact is true. But you come in there in a room full of black men in football, and that's your story? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's time for redemption, baby.
Yeah, and then you take it one circle out to the general public.
Yes.
I have a question.
Yes. And also, understand, Art is the man who wooed his wife because he played University of Houston, and he was in one of the fellas' rooms, and Ozzy Brothers, For the Love of You had come out, and he heard the lyrics and wrote them down on a piece of paper and gave them to his woman. That was a room that Art Briles was uniquely equipped to win, except yeah. There was a bigger room outside the littler room, and he still hasn't figured out the trick on that one.
Yeah, this is where an information economy that runs at the speed of ours really works against things, because honestly, if this had been 20 years ago or 30 years ago, this hire would have happened. And the delay between it happening and it being instituted, it would have made all of this irrelevant. All of it, right? Like, we would go, oh, well, that's happening at Grambling. Okay, cool. That's an item in the paper. We would have glossed right over it. Yeah, not now.
No.
Now we're in the press conference and everybody can see it happen. And that, like, people are visual learners where you go, oh man, they're hiring Art Briles. That seems sort of theoretical. And then he shows up with the two-tone hair, has a blonde dye job that I think went kind of poorly, and then like the dark goatee, so he kind of looks like NWO Hulk Hogan.
He got to go to full Greg Williams, though. Remember when Greg Williams got out of witness protection? Like, he's got to go the full Greg Williams.
Yeah, you're going to have to, like, have plastic surgery. You're going to have to take a pseudonym. You're going to have to, that'd be the only way that people are going to hire him without consequences, if we don't actually know who you are. I can't wait to see the macro angle on HBCUs, by the way, because this has always seemed like a market inefficiency to me. Y'all could do your own thing. Like, HBCUs could just go ahead and establish their own economies in terms of football.
The thing that people don't understand, you can go to the league from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as I read that Urban Meyer story, that's the thing. I mean, Joe, we're talking about this.
Yeah, talent.
Yeah, why are you putting up with this? You can go to the league anywhere. Like, the schools, all this, we send guys to the league. No, you get guys league ready. Like, by and large, these guys send themselves to the league. You can go from anywhere. But I will say this, not everywhere has nice stuff, and it's kind of hard to turn down nice stuff.
Kind of hard to turn down nice stuff. Also kind of hard to turn down the absolutely distilled experience that you get as, say, an Alabama football player, where they go, what will you have to worry about in addition to football? Nothing. Nothing. You will have to maintain total focus on football. But that's it. It's a water slide. You start at the top, and at the bottom, you come out in the second round of the draft. That's the idea. And I don't have to worry about any hiccups along the way. It's an all-inclusive. Think about it that way. When you go, okay, well, what is it? You could just, everybody's going to get to go on vacation. Everybody's going to get to go on vacation, right? Here's 2 weeks. What are you going to do with it? Do you want to plan everything? Or do you just want to put a credit card down? Be like, for $800, I get the full University of Alabama experience. And at the end, I'm NFL ready. Here we go. That's pretty much, I think, the reason why they have a competitive advantage. I would also say this, by the way, about Urban Meyer. Nobody's mentioned this. You're not getting the same dude. I think people go, well, if you hire this guy, you know, now in college, you'd get a national title because he's figured out that trick. You don't get the same person at 37 or 57, right? Or 67. Like, that is not what happened with him. Admittedly, I think a bad idea from the start to hire him for that gig. I don't think it was as bad an idea, because I think if you had gotten the same dude 10 years earlier, it would have been a totally different experience.
Yeah. That is Spencer Hall. Check him out. Channel 6. Check him out. I guess Thinking Out Loud. We coming back in the fall.
We're coming back. Coming back in the fall. Doing that. Oh, I'm doing Debatable. So I'll be doing Debatable with Pablo and Mina.
On Friday. All right.
Yeah, I'm usually doing that once a week. And the podcast Shutdown Fullcast is going to be coming back from a little bit of a hiatus here in a second. So I'm doing too much.
But in the best way possible.
Yes. Yes, sir.
There we go. Thank you, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for watching on YouTube. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain and Adi Khan handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.